What game worlds do you know like the back of your hand? Could you still navigate to any destination in an old Grand Theft Auto? Or would you prefer to create your own world maps in a role-playing game with your friends? Welcome to the Sheffield Gaming Podcast for August 2023. I'm Matt Turner. This month, we'll be talking about exploring game worlds and how sometimes games can help us explore the real world too.
Basically exploring and celebrating video game worlds, so just appreciate all the kind of artistry that goes into making them, and also kind of appreciating physical maps.
That's the voice of Leah Dungay. She's the learning officer for the National Video Game Museum.
So I help run and devise all the workshops and the activities, so all the school stuff that we do, and all the seasonal things like the fast travel. So I've been helping to design the trails and to make accompanying activities. When people come to the museum, there's kind of something new on every holiday.
In addition to our usual rundown of the exciting gaming events upcoming in August, this month, Bone Loaf's Connor Clark and I invited Leah to come and tell us about the MVM's new fast travel exhibition.
It's like a summer programming for the museum. We have three trails in the museum that kind of encourage you to explore video game worlds in different ways by going and playing the games. One of them is the local line. So they're kind of set up a bit like train routes or tram routes.
Through
the museum. So one of them is the local line. So you can get on the local line and go and find games kind of either inspired by Sheffield or Yorkshire, or games made here. So things like Bramall Lane is in FIFA, or the most recent FIFA game, so you can find Bramall Lane in there, or you can go and play Gang Beasts, which is a game made in Sheffield, you know.
As someone who's been to Bramall Lane, how does it look in FIFA?
I mean, very accurate.
Is it?
Yeah. It is Bramall Lane.
Because I've not played FIFA, is there like a weird like uncanniness where you're like, oh, they've even got like that door is the same colour.
I think it's pretty up to date.
You can zoom in and everyone's holding pie and peas.
I think essentially. It only appeared in FIFA in 2020.
Right.
So it's a more modern recreation of Bramall Lane. Entirely accurate. So the local line, and the local line ends in Sackboy. So you pick up this trail map as you go along, and at the end of each line there's a stamp, so you can stamp your route and collect your route map, and then you can go back and do another one. So there's three in total.
Like international travel, except that at the visa, sort of at the passport stamp checkout, Sackboy's there.
Sackboy's there. You get a little Yorkshire Rose stamp for your route, and then you can go back and do another one. So the other two are real world, so kind of real world recreations or games inspired by real places.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade cabinet, the four-player arcade cabinet we've got is on that route, which is kind of a semi New York style world map. It's loosely inspired by New York.
Is that the Shredder's Revenge one, or is that the old one?
It is the old one. Yeah. So the old kind of four-player.
The original arcade.
Yeah, the really lovely, lovely looking one, yeah.
I think, is it Turtles in Time? Is that the one where you go on, like, the Golden Gate Bridge? Oh, no, it's not the Golden Gate Bridge. No, it is New York. The level's called the Big Apple, I think.
It is definitely set in New York.
The Brooklyn Bridge. Yeah, and then you even go in, like, the Statue of Liberty's. That's where you fight on the Statue of Liberty in that game. Not in the original arcade one, though. That's in Turtles in Time.
And then in Shredder's Revenge, they replace the Statue of Liberty with a Statue of Krang.
Do they? Yeah. Oh my god, I have played that.
Like,
I can't remember.
A giant Krang.
Oh, I love it.
That like is a big mech and shoots at you.
Oh.
That's a good game.
Interesting.
All three of them are good games. The fact that the latest one that's like on Switch and stuff is a lot easier than because you don't have to spend half of your life savings to continue.
Yeah, that's the good thing about that. We don't have to pay to play on the arcade one. You can play as long as you like and complete the game without spending £100.
Anyway, so
that derailed that conversation.
Local line takes you from Bramall Lane to Sackboy and to a few places in between.
Yeah,
and you said there was a real world places.
What? So real world. Yeah, so that's where a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is on, and it goes through a game called The World is Flat, which is kind of a GeoGuessr-style game that was originally played with a gym yoga ball as a controller. And then that ends with SimCity. So it's not a real place. SimCity isn't a real place, but it's based on, you know, this kind of real-world environments and recreating real places. And then the last trail is Out of This World. So this is, entirely alien places. So it starts with like Space Invaders, obviously not a real place, but then it goes to games like Nintendo Land or Lumino City. These games that are really heavily, they've got this really well thought out kind of world. Like Lumino City especially is this kind of really unique video game environment that is a physical environment. It's been built in real life, and it's all kind of stop motion, so we've got some of the models as well that you can see.
Sweet. So I love that. Yeah, so it's out of this world, but it's actually in this world.
Yeah, it's not a real place. It's this fantastical place, but yeah, it's a really beautiful little place. And then that ends with actually two games on the end of the line, which is No Man's Sky, which is obviously a very out of this world type of game, entirely alien, and Myst, which is also Myst, not the original but the remaster, which I can't remember what year that came out in, but Myst.
Oh, early 90s, I guess. 93, going out on record.
It was recreated a few years ago, remastered a few years ago, and re-released.
I never saw more than I think like three of the like screens in Myst, or because it was just such a complicated game. I'd like to cross the bridge and then like stuck. Close door, that's it. Okay. Always really like, it was always such a mystery box that I was always like, I wanted to be in this world. This world had so much promise and everything, but it was just maybe because it was so hard to move around and it had more of a mystery, it had more of a promise to it.
It really didn't tell you anything more than even, it didn't tell you even as much as you needed to know, never mind more. So you were constantly drawing your own conclusions on the environments.
You're just walking through, like taking it all in, but it doesn't really tell you anything about where you are or what's going on. And
isn't that's how like Dark Souls feels, right? Like those games, you're not given any information on what you're doing or why, and you just sort of have to engage the parts of your brain that you sometimes might not, which is to say, like, your pathfinding, your appraisal of architecture, to say, to go, like, oh, this is imposing, this is this is supposed to be this is functional, this is whatever this is.
And you don't often do that in games sometimes. So we've got a video installation as part of this by an artist and journalist called Andy Kelly, which is Other Places, and he's basically disjointed the camera in lots of these environments and takes you on a little walking tour of these different like places in games that are like huge and expansive. So like Firewatch is in there, Red Dead Redemption is in there, like Assassin's Creed Odyssey as well. So these games that you're just running from place to place, not really taking in the environment, or maybe you are, but you're kind of running through it. It's just this nice, really relaxing appreciation of the background art, you know, the places that you don't kind
of
look at.
The framing of it that just makes you take a second look at it.
Like,
I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey was a big one for me.
It's a great one.
I was overwhelmed with that game when I first started playing it, and there's so many like icons on the map. Like I say, it's Ubisoft's eyes or whatever. But then I just remember getting on a horse and just going on the map and just literally going into the vast unknown of the map, saying, "Horse, go here," and then I would put the controller down and I
just
watch. I just watched my character go around the horse, and once I allowed myself to kind of get, you know, not feel like I had to master the environment and be, you know, on top of every different objective. And once I'm just like, I just want to be in this place, it was so much more relaxing and so much more engaging. And that's when I really started to love that game. And now that's one of my favorite games of all time, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, just for that world.
And that's why, like, the discovery modes for those games are great. I think they've realized that actually we should put in another way for people to appreciate all the work that's gone into recreating these kind of historical places and you know, teach them something about what they've learned. And like, some of the items are based on like real museum collection items, and they kind of let you look at those and see where the inspiration is, or they tell you about the places that they've deviated from like real historical facts in the game and why they've made that decision. And that's really interesting as kind of like a development document. But that's a really nice thing to kind of sit down and relax if you're done playing games and you want to just sit and chill. You can go and watch those videos.
Just watch them really talk at you.
But the other one is also Yakuza, So that's a really nice one to watch. These kind of nighttime, you know, images of Tokyo and
What is it? It's a district in Tokyo called Kabukicho or something, is it? But it's not a real district.
Well, they're loosely based on Tokyo and Osaka, I believe.
Yeah. It's just a real place now because it's been in eight, nine games. Mm-hmm. And it's evolved all the time. There's new places, new shops open up as you know, continue throughout the games, and there are new places to discover. But it's totally fictional. Mm-hmm. But it feels like you've lived there because you've been playing it for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting. I'm playing Neo The World Ends With You very slowly. And that's set in an alternate world of Shibuya, the district of Tokyo. And they keep asking me questions about Tokyo. Like, they're like, what is the ratio of incline of Dokuzaka? How am I supposed to know that? I don't know how I'm supposed to know that. But I imagine there's a sign somewhere that tells me.
If they ask you that question about Sheffield, you reckon you have an answer as well.
Like, there are signs around Sheffield that tell you what the incline of this hill is.
I suppose.
Hills that you do not want to take certain vehicles down. It's been interesting, certainly. Like, I know buildings that are in Tokyo, having never been to Tokyo. There are certain cities that I know. If I see a skyline, I'm like, there's that building, right? I know what the Rockefeller Center looks like. I know what the Gherkin looks like.
Walkie-talkie, stuff like that.
Exactly. But, I've never been to Tokyo. I've never even really had this deep interest in Tokyo. But suddenly I know more about
you know so
Tokyo.
Much.
Or at least the Shibuya sort of section of it. And so it's been really, really kind of weird to have that tangential learning that's just come through that.
Oh man, you should play Ghostwire Tokyo if you've not played that game yet. It's a new video game
Now.
And that's like that. You start in Shibuya Crossing and just to say I've been to Tokyo recently.
Right? Sure, you've never mentioned it.
I played Ghostwire Tokyo after I got back from Tokyo.
Okay.
And it's so close. I was walking to places going, I remember this shop. Oh, this isn't this shop. This is actually an arcade. Oh, this thing's different. But it was, I could only do that because it was photorealistic, right? And it was clearly designed as kind of a love letter to the city of Tokyo. And it just works. It just works. Yeah, I felt like back, I could remember so much just by walking through it virtually.
Is there really a statue of a dog in Animal Crossing?
Absolutely, yeah. Hachiko.
Hachiko, that's the one, yeah. I got asked questions about that guy as well.
Nice. It's that's happened in the Persona games as well. When you're in the classroom and they ask you historical facts about Japan and and you're like, oh, I didn't do this at school. I didn't go to a Japanese high school. And suddenly it's a bit tricky, but yeah.
Fortunately, Google just cheated me out of all of those questions in Persona because there's no way I was going to do that.
No.
But I haven't traveled much, but it's just really nice to see, to know that you can get this tangential learning out of without traveling.
Yeah. And that's kind of the theme is obviously fast travel. That's the theme is you can fast travel in video games and you can travel to all these places that you might not get to in real life, or it's a little bit hard to just kind of sit down and suddenly you're in Tokyo, but you can do that in certain games, which is really nice to see. It was also nice to see all the ways that Sheffield has inspired games or games like this that have been made here. And and then the other part of it, we've got a little install of maps, because the other thing we've kind of found looking through the collection is that we've got loads of, old physical video games, and they always came with maps. Those beautiful things that we don't get anymore, and I'm not bitter about it. But we have we have a few of the original GTA games, so GTA 1 and 2, and they come with these amazing maps of the city and all the routes and things like that.
They're there's newspapers as well.
They're huge. They're really big. They're just so good. And it's really nice to see when a game has a map, Firewatch has got a map in game, but they provide you with a PDF. You can print off a physical map and use that. Good. And it's really nice. It's just a shame. We should get more maps with games.
We should. There's something so powerful about that, about, entering a virtual world, but having it kind of. Mm. I know all the possibilities laid out to you in your mm-hmm. hands, literally in your hands. And also, what else are we going to read on the bus on the way back home, yeah. home from town?
From picking up the game.
Yeah.
I mean,
do I read immediately?
That was like, go to Blockbuster Video, rent a game, yeah. take out the manual, read the whole mm-hmm. thing, yep. know the controls by the time you get home. Yeah. But the maps, yeah, I'll never forget getting Oblivion mm. and having that map on the wall behind my massive CRT TV mm-hmm. that I was playing it on.
Amazing.
You know, this thing that, like, I don't know why we had such a big CRT TV in the era of flat screens, but we did. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, then behind that was the entire map of Oblivion. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, you know, when my friends came around after school, I was able to go like, okay, so I'm here. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to do is get down there. And sort of, like, there was a spatial element. It's hard to describe how much your mind can hook onto mm-hmm. a spatial mm-hmm. physical map better than it can hook onto a one where you're constantly utilizing UI.
Yeah, I think you get more familiar with world maps when you're physically trying to work it out yourself. There's lots of, you know, in-game things like pinning a place on a map or just having a route on your compass that kind of takes you straight to that place that you end up getting a bit lost. Like if you took that away,
yeah,
like we're playing Diablo at the minute and you just pin a place on the map and that's how you know to get there. If I was trying to get there
Diablo
myself
GPS,
essentially putting on Google Maps in Diablo and if I didn't have Google Maps I would be constantly lost. Like I wouldn't know where I was going.
Does it tell you the route if you do that?
Yeah,
yeah.
The route as well.
I've just I have not been using that feature at all.
I mean, so most of the time I just say go in this general direction and then figure it out.
Yeah.
It will take you literally the least amount of distance you need to take. Exactly. So it's got you swerving through forests and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when it's just like, get to here. When you know when you're in the zone in Diablo where it's just like brain dead, press button, kill monster.
Take
you know
me
when
over
you're
there.
In that headspace.
Yeah,
you just go make map, go here, kill thing. Like it's perfect for that. But it is Diablo GPS.
Yeah,
which is
and you'd need it. I think there's some games the world maps are so huge that if you didn't have things like fast travel or you'd just spend hours just walking. And sometimes that's nice, but sometimes it's like, I don't have 6 hours just to get to the other side of this map.
Getting lost brings us on to our other point as well. I've been playing this game then, and I'm just going to get it up on my phone, because you can play it on your phone, or you can play it on your PC. It's on a browser. It's called LostGamer.io, LostGamer.io, and that's also the URL.
LostGamer.io.
LostGamer.io. And it's basically GeoGuessr. So you know how GeoGuessr works, right? It like uses Google Maps. It drops you into a street view part of somewhere on the planet and it can be anywhere, and you can kind of like try to narrow it down in some way, say only pick European countries or only pick the US or something like that, but usually it drops you in the middle of absolutely anywhere in the world and you just have to then get a map and put a pin on where you think you are and you get points based on how close you are. And sometimes it's like you're in the middle of a desert and you're like, I have no idea, is this a US desert, is this an African desert, is this a where on earth could this be? And that's kind of the fun of it, though, right?
Yeah.
But LostGamer.io is the same thing. It's just GeoGuessr, but with virtual worlds, with open world video games.
Oh, wow.
So it's got a few games on here, such as Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
So you could just put a random place in Breath of the Wild and then open up the map, see where you could do it. I reckon that would be a great game, because you get lost in it all the time, like that and Tears of the Kingdom. It'd be a great game for it. I've not played that one, though.
For sure, especially because like there's so much of that map that you could have completed the game and never have been.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like this is just, it's because it's got one random Korok seed somewhere. And nobody's collected all that. But it's got other maps like Skyrim, like Elden Ring, Genshin Impact, Red Dead Redemption 2, Fortnite, World of Warcraft. And the big one for me is it's recently added Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
Yeah.
And those maps for me, and I'm thinking actually Grand Theft Auto Vice City is the one that I played when I was a kid. Absolutely loved that. And I got so engrossed in that game and engrossed in that map, which felt massive at the time, by the way. It's not. It's really small.
It's quite small.
They fit it on the PSP like a few years later. but I could just, I reckon you could just put me in the middle of absolutely nowhere and I'd know exactly where I was. I'd even know the street name. I'd know what the cars were called. I'd know where the nearest kind of, I don't know, like police station is or whatever. I know where all this stuff was. And it's just that world is like a world I would never, ever get lost in. But I suppose my question then for you is, what world could you never get lost in?
Mm.
What world do you just know inside out?
For me, it's definitely World of Warcraft.
That's a massive world as well. That's one of the biggest open worlds in games, isn't it?
It's enormous, yeah. And admittedly, I'm like two expansions behind. So there are out of... hang on, let me do some quick mental maths. I'm going to say seven expansions.
Okay.
I won't know, probably like a tenth of the game.
Okay.
But the rest of it, I have spent so long in, and I think the other thing is... I spent time with friends in, meaning that I've got actual formative memories of people and things that I've connected with humans. Like, you know, when you think of a friend and you think, oh, you remember that time that we had this conversation? And it's not really, you can be like, I was out in the Peak District and I had this conversation with my dad about going to France, right? Like, and you remember that. You might remember that connection with your dad forever or whatever.
It's an emotional connection to
exactly.
a place.
Yeah. Same thing with World of Warcraft. You talk to enough people, you get to know enough people, you have those real human connections, and it just ties it in together.
Yeah.
I think interesting you chose a video game and not a board game. Like, could you have chosen, is there any easy, like, or really, like, really engrossing board game maps? I was thinking, like, the simplest board game map, right? Monopoly. But if you told me a stop in Monopoly and then asked me to say what colour it is, I would have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, Mayfair, sure, that's dark blue. Old Kent Road, sure, that's brown. Everything else?
No idea.
Park Lane is also
a dark blue one
as well, yeah.
Regent Street is green because I keep getting that one in the McDonald's. Games.
Yeah, that's probably how I know them most.
But that's it.
Yeah. Definitely not that. Like, because I think the other thing is that Monopoly, like, yeah, you only have fights about the rubbish ones and the really expensive ones, right?
Everything in between.
Exactly.
I don't care.
I think I saw it on Reddit. It was a shower thought. Somebody put on Reddit the other day that a really interesting shower thought that is, if you play Monopoly with friends and none of you buy anything, you just go round and round forever and constantly make money.
That's a good way of playing.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
It's the That's second somebody time. Buys a property, it all goes to shit.
As soon as somebody becomes a landlord, everyone's that's arguing.
Why, that's why it's called the landlord's game. Yeah. To show that to us.
Yeah.
So, Leah, what's your video game world that you can't get lost in?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, because lots of the video games I play are kind of these customizable world. Like, I play lots of Animal Crossing, which it's very specific to mine. I'm not going to get lost in that world because I built it. But I think the one I really wouldn't get lost in is the original Pokemon Snap. Like, you put me in any of those environments on one of the little, like, train lines that you've got going around.
Mm-hmm.
I know where I am. I know which Pokemon is coming up next that I need to take a picture of. I know which direction I need to aim my camera to take a picture of. Lapras or something.
You know how the world works. Like,
But you play the same route, so it drops the beach level. It drops you in that island. You look around, and then you look to the left, and Pikachu's running. If you hit Pikachu with an apple, he'll run up and he'll jump on the surfboard. and over in the distance, there's Lapras in the sea. Like, you take a picture of that. And then somebody, I can't remember which Pokemon, but somebody comes running across the line just in front of you, and you take a picture as they walk away. Like, that's like muscle memory. Like, I know exactly where to go.
It's kind of like you've learned the speedrun strat, except you can't ever go any faster.
You can't go faster. You can press that little button that kind of speeds you up for like just tiny amount and makes that horrible whirring noise that encourages you not to.
Don't they? Speedrunners have to look down at the ground. They can't even look at the world.
Yeah, you go quicker if you look down.
Yeah, because it loads the world faster. Because the Nintendo 64 had a lot of processing issues. So speedrunners, when they play that game, they look down at the floor until it's time to lift.
They know, they know when to look up and when which direction to look up in to take the pictures that they need to take to complete that game. Yeah.
That's that kind of pattern finding stuff is really like it. When you find that flow state, is so nice though. I remember think games like Mirror's Edge, where you have to get from one place to another, but you're kind of pathfinding between it and doing all your parkour nonsense and running along the wall and things. And when you get that level that you found so much fun that you were going to do it 17,000 times and just try and beat your time by 1 second, like fun enough game as it is, but the real fun came from knowing it was a driving game. You know, like knowing that you were trying to beat your lap time.
Yeah. It's a rhythm game, essentially. It's like you're just trying to do the same patterns over and over again and shave a couple of seconds off your time.
In terms of maps, though, board game maps, like the interesting thing is they're kind of divided into two, well, maybe three if you include tabletop role-playing games, which is to say ridiculously complicated road to maps, where they either it's like a canon map of Dungeons and Dragons or the setting of whatever board game you're in, and I've got, you know, Gloomhaven upstairs, which has this huge map that you add stickers to as you complete various different things.
Do you have a big enough table?
Just barely. Can't have the game out while the map's out. Okay. It's a very much a two-stage thing. You get the map out, you decide where you're going, like you're looking at a map screen.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
And then you like cross off the scenario you're doing, you go like, we're going there. Okay, fold the map away, put it in the box. Now get the things out for the for the scenario.
Oh my gosh.
And so that kind of level loads it in front of you as you're making you zoom in to the cave that you're trying to explore or what have you.
That's insane.
So there's those kind of rote maps, lovely and discoverable, and I'm sure I know a fair few places in the Gloomhaven map. But I don't know them quite so well as the ones that, like, you make yourself. There are, and in board games, oftentimes that's done randomly, right? Those maps, those good map games, Carcassonne, Karuba, even things like Twilight Imperium, where where randomly you're drawing space out of the out of a bag. You know, you're pulling sectors of space and planets and putting them around this central planet, and as you kind of sit there, because you've already got your starting planet, you're seeing your desire to conquer and to kind of settle this galaxy appear in front of you as the world kind of like is randomly determined. You go, oh my goodness, that's a good industrial planet. Really get started there. Okay, if I need research, the science, that one. Okay, that one I can get to, but only if I make deals with the person to my left. So, you know,
That's fascinating. So you mean, the map opens up in front of you, but by doing so, it kind of narrows down your drive or kind of your objective.
Absolutely.
Like you begin to, your actual route through it gets simpler, probably. It's exploratory, really, isn't it? In a way, I suppose.
And then there's tabletop role-playing games, which are entirely about building maps. One I'm really interested in playing, or I haven't played myself, is The Quiet Year, which is a role-playing game that essentially the only play is building a map. You get together with your friends and you decide to play out a year. Something bad has happened. It's kind of a post-apocalyptic thing.
The year is 2020.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
The world has kind of collapsed around you, whatever world you decide you're playing in. In the abstract, you're not playing as a group of adventurers or a galactic council even or anything like that. You're playing as the concept of the society. And what you're going to do is make decisions for this society. You start by just making marks on the map. This is a mountain. This is a moon. This is a lake. This is a skyscraper that once held, you know, this is the big factory that made the magic potions. And then, best part about it, you get a deck of cards, a normal deck of cards. Each card corresponds to a decision. And the decisions might be someone in your society is ailing and ill and trying to take care of them will put a massive burden on your resources.
Yep, yep.
Who are they? and what do you do about it? And that the person who drew that card, you kind of take it in turns, decides.
Boy, it sounds real. Oh, man.
Sounds stressful.
And so you're just talking to each other about this year, this quiet year, which is the name of the game, where you decide in this space between terrible things happening what your society becomes. And it's used frequently as a map building technique to for players to get to know a world before they play another role playing game in that world.
That's clever. Yeah, so that's clever.
We're going to make our D&D map by like collectively decentralize the kind of writing process and do it
together. That's genius.
That's such a game designer thing, isn't it? I need to make a map for my game that I've made.
We should play
a game out of it.
That's so cool.
But yeah, it's very, very cool. It's a very cool idea. Quite simple, and you don't need much for it because you can just get the PDF of the of the game, and then you need like 3 dice and a pack of cards and a Sharpie and a big piece of paper. Like
that's really cool.
That's the game.
I like that.
Yeah, it's. I imagine that you would certainly know those locations. Like the back of your hand by the time you'd.
Especially if you're going on to then. Use that world in something like D&D.
Exactly.
Like you get to build it together and then flesh it out.
Speaking about making maps, obviously every month we want to talk about what are the upcoming events that are happening in this month, and this month is August 2023. Not a quiet year, quite an exciting year. Mm. Lots of stuff going on. And actually, the first thing I wanted to talk about is a big event and a big map that we've not actually fully made yet, but it will be made by the time that August the 21st rolls around, because that is the start of the next Sheffield Games Collective adventure trail. So you may remember the special edition podcast from last year, from October last year, when me and you, Matt, when we went wandering around Sheffield City Centre playing
on location.
On location podcast. It was a lot of fun, and I'm sure a nightmare to edit, so thank you very much for that. But we made a trail. Me and Matt made a trail that was Dungeons and Dragons and kind of tabletop role playing inspired, and was all about going to 9 different venues all across Sheffield City Centre and playing a game and kind of battling some demons and some monsters and some steel minions and defeating an evil warlock. And it was really fun, and we saw a lot of families kind of come along and take part and explore Sheffield City Centre and perhaps go to venues that they hadn't gone to before, and take a little bit of time exploring these venues and appreciating these venues, and just getting to know Sheffield a bit better. So we've decided to do it again. And last year it was in October, and it was a bit cold and a bit chilly and a bit rainy. So this year we're doing it in August, where
I'm looking out the window and
it's basically
raining.
The same.
By the time 21st of August rolls around, we are in heatwave, baby. We're like a nice sustainable heatwave where it's not too bad, and you can go and explore and have a nice ice creams and Fanta lemons and stuff like that.
I'll hold you to that.
Yep.
Yeah. It'll be your fault.
That's the aim. But our adventure trail for this year is going to be exploring 9 venues all across Sheffield. There's different venues. There are some that I've carried over from the adventure game from last year, the City of Games Adventure Trail. But there's also a few new ones and a few surprises as well that I think is going to be really fun. And there's going to be lots more going on in this trail. It is... Instead of being Dungeons & Dragons themes, this one, on the theme of exploration, casts you as a space explorer, as an aspiring space captain, star captain, looking to explore the lovely planets of the Steely Way Galaxy. So it's called Steel City Galaxies. It's also going to be a part of the Sheffield Showcase event that's happening in early September. But it does happen from August the 21st all the way to September the 3rd. If you are listening to this and you're thinking, that sounds fun, I want to know more, have a look on the Sheffield.games website. There's going to be lots more information there. It's quite quiet on there at the moment, but by the time August 21st rolls around, there'll be downloadable maps and activity sheets and everything.
Lots of things.
But we'll show you here about that more later on.
Yeah. Mm. And we have new... like last time, you might have discovered Sheffield businesses that you hadn't, or even venues that you hadn't seen before that you didn't know existed. That's not going to change. This time, there will be, we have new businesses and venues included in the trail. Mm-hmm. So you might well just find somewhere that you didn't know existed, or you've got another chance to revisit the places that you love around Sheffield that do gaming things.
So that's clearly the main event for this month, but Matt, what else? What else is going on?
Well, I'd be remiss in my job if I didn't talk about the Treehouse Games, the Gamers Academy, which is an initiative, a cool event that we are doing over the course of the summer and hopefully onward, which is a kind of introduction, starting incredibly accessible to various genres of board games. Board games can be a little overwhelming, intimidating. Mm-hmm. You've got to read a rule book, and sometimes, and I've seen it happen time and time again, people pick a really interesting looking board game off the shelf, look at it in wide-eyed terror because they've found they've opened the book and it is just overwhelming with concepts they don't understand and various like kind of assumptions about what they already know.
Oh, I've been there. I've definitely been that person.
We've all been there. I do this as my job and I've been there. We decided that what a lot of people don't know, and that I think everyone at the Treehouse knows, but like we don't always get the chance to communicate, is that board games have foundational skills. In fact, so do video games, honestly. The using a controller is a foundational skill for every difficult video game.
Absolutely.
And we get better and better at looking at maps, navigating UIs, equipping gear. They're all foundational skills that eventually you learn and we just take for granted. Same thing with board games. The idea of whether or not when you get to the bottom of a deck of cards, you reshuffle it and put it face down again, or whether that's the end of that deck of cards. What that means, what a worker placement game is.
Yeah, well, victory points. Like, they're pretty common in a lot of games now.
Exactly. How do you win a game? Like, what do you do to actually win this?
A lot of games, I historically think that, you need to destroy your entire enemy. No, not in this game. Sometimes game is victory points.
You just need to build a nice little town. That's how you get victory points in this one. You just sort of make a bird bath. the five genres of board games that we have kind of started with, because this isn't by no means comprehensive, but we just thought that these are games that people, you know, they might not know, settle fairly nicely into these genres, which is to say, the first one is area control. Those games, you might have heard of things like Root, which is a game about little animals marauding their way, kind of Robin Hood-like, through a forest, and taking control of various clearings and having revolutions and things like that.
Ticket to Ride, perhaps? Would that count as area control?
There is an element of that kind of, like, keeping people out of areas. But area control generally, there is conflict that allows you, it's kind of King of the Hill style stuff, where you'll have a map. I would say there's area control elements to Ticket to Ride. Definitely thinking about it. But the idea, it starts with a game called Small World, which is a game where you have civilizations that are kind of given birth to war and then die, and then at the end of each age, you get to see how well they did, you know, how much of the world they conquered, and then they sort of like collapse in on each other, and you get this nice zoomed out view in the kind of small world thing. It's got that kind of standard Risk style map dominance vibe to it, but unlike something like Risk, it takes usually less than an hour, and there's a real kind of there's an end in sight. You can kind of play to a goal rather than just waiting to see who ends up completely smushing everyone else. So there are five levels of each genre.
Okay.
So I'll go through the others, which are deck building games. There are cooperative games. There are roll or flip and write games.
Okay.
And then there's worker placement games. So
So these kind of genres, then, these five genres.
Yeah.
So they each have, you see, how many games on
they
the
have five stages each.
The five stages, and these are basically just simple or accessible?
The first ones are fully accessible, very accessible, usually playable, under an hour,
right,
with learning, and...
my kind of game.
Yeah, simple.
And they will teach you kind of foundational skills, which is to say, once you've played a game where you kind of start to kind of grok, understand those the simple concepts of like, oh, I need to roll these dice and then I'm going to write these things into my pad,
yep,
and you understand the goal of that and you understand what makes you win and where the strategy comes from, then you might enjoy that enough to move on to stage two, where we've just, there are maybe a few other concepts thrown into the pot, and you'll still be working with the, in the same kind of comfort zone of the previous game, but there might be an extra little thing thrown on top.
Right, and if you get to stage five, then you've kind of hit some of the most complicated games in that genre, perhaps.
Just about, yeah, absolutely.
And you should be equipped to then go and pick up a random game from the shelf in the treehouse and be like, yeah, all right, I think I can tackle this.
You get what's going on.
For sure, and the great thing about that is these are stamp cards. You get given a stamp card with these things. So once you've played one of these games, we give you a stamp for it, and if you complete a column, meaning you've completed all of level one, then you get 2 free hours at the treehouse.
To put that knowledge to the test.
Exactly. Yeah. Or play some of level two. And if you manage to complete a whole row... then you get a sticker, which is like a little sew-on badge. They're all made so then they look like you've completed your worker placement badge for the
Scouts badge. Yeah, amazing.
So you can
either Pokemon gym badge.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. My little box to show them off.
Oh, stamps and stickers are the best things ever.
The hope is that eventually this will be just enough to get people who maybe have come to the treehouse once or twice, played through our games taster menu, which are all very accessible games, and they're looking for something else, because what we found was one of the bigger criticisms of the treehouse, the way it worked, was that people got through the game's taster menu and they loved the all of the game's taster menu, and then they didn't know where to go next.
Right.
And we certainly noticed that people would come in and they would play through it, and then they would either become big enough board game fans, like they were super incensed, they'd buy a load of their own games,
watch
and start
YouTube
playing
videos, and
exactly. Or they just kind of stall there. You know, that would be the point at which there was nothing there for them. So we'd like it if this was a kind of a way to just nudge people over the edge and just see just how wide the board gaming space is.
Nice. So that's on. You can just walk into the treehouse now, pick up a card, and crack on.
That's exactly right.
Lovely. Fantastic. Awesome. Ace. So once you've kind of finish your Games Academy and graduated, if you do manage to do that in August, I don't think you will, but you can then head over to Meltdown Sheffield. So they are going to have an event on the 26th of August, which is called the Steel City Chiptune event. These events are basically some of the best nights that Meltdown kind of have. I mean, Meltdown is a fantastic night out, particularly when they're doing like their race nights and pub quiz nights and everything, but Steel City Chiptune is basically chiptune music all night. It's mega, it's rammed, everyone loves it. It's probably some of the best chiptune literally in the country.
Yeah,
best kind of video game style dancing music. And this month they are welcoming Chipsil to it's going to be headlining the Steel City Chiptune. If you don't know anything about Chipsil, just Google her and have a look at some of the stuff she does. She's absolutely fantastic. Has kind of done the soundtrack to some of the best games out there as well. So
if you're a video gamer, you'll probably have seen the name if you haven't associated it with a person yet.
Yeah, fantastic. Other things as well. So Patriot Games, obviously down on Mary Street, have event on every single night. Actually, and if you are kind of into any kind of games, if you've completed your Game Academy and actually you are fully into some collectible or trading card games, there will be an event for you at Patriot Games. But the one I just wanted to give a quick shout out to this month is on the 19th of August, from 12 p.m. till 5 p.m. They're running a Playtest UK event. That Matt, you've been to a few of them before, right?
They kind of run events at the treehouse, so I've been working around when they've been on as well. It's more testing space for people who are working on games, space for people who have made games and are just either looking to test their games that they're in the middle of, or looking to play other people's games and give feedback and have that, be in that beautiful space, that creative space where you can give important feedback at like crucial times, when people are ready to have their game seen by the world, and you can say, ah, this central mechanic is good, but I just don't know why I'm doing it, or like that sort of these pieces of feedback that everyone needs. And that oftentimes, like, it's really difficult to get if you're making a board game. Secondly, it's like game design has loads of transferable skills. Being in a space with other people who make games means that if you are thinking of designing a game, then you can get all sorts of interesting conversation. But if you just want to see games before they are made, if you just want to see
that creative process,
exactly, open the hatch and see the inner workings a little bit, it's a lovely space to sort of like feel like you're in on something as well.
Nice. Cool. Cool. And otherwise, it's the rest of the summer holidays, I think, this month. So make sure you get out there, make sure it's not raining, go out, catch some rays, enjoy some sun. And we'll be back with a podcast next month. Before we go, Leah, did you want to give a shout out to anything? Where can people find more of you and more of the Fast Travel exhibit?
There's not too much of me online. I'm on Twitter, but I'm not that interested on there, so don't bother. Head to the MVM UK on Twitter, and they'll be tweeting about all the other things. We've got some like craft activities and some little robots activities out for the summer as well. So you can go and program some little robots to follow some maps and paths, or build your own kind of craft-based video game world. So go and have a look at that.
And if you want to pick up tickets to go see the Fast Travel exhibit, where do they go?
Head to themvm.org.
Okay.
I believe that should take you to the MVM's website. Just Google National Video Game Museum in Sheffield, and buy tickets. Come see us.
Awesome. Thank you. And Matt, where can people hear more of you online?
Oh, if you want to, then if you want to hear more of me, which I'm sure you've heard far too much over the last half an hour or so, then you can, of course, find me. I am on Twitter at Matt Speaks Words. I'm actually at Matt Speaks Words as many places as I can find. You can also listen to my other podcast, which is the Life's a Pitch podcast, where we pitch movies that'll never get made based on titles that you, the listener, give us. Those are very silly. It's a very silly show, and if you want silliness about movies that don't exist, then you should listen to us over on soundcloud.com/ Life's a Pitch podcast, or Spotify, anywhere where good podcasts are distributed, you can find us. As for that, if you want to give us titles on that, that's at Life's a Pitch Show on Twitter, or Life's a Pitch Podcast on Facebook.
Lovely stuff. And with me, you can find me on Threads. I'm on Threads. I'm not necessarily on Twitter.
The only one.
Connor Clark. You probably find me on Instagram first. Otherwise, like I said, you'll hear me on here next month, and you'll find me at various places where you will also find Gang Beasts and Bone Loaf and lots of all of those things. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks for listening to the Sheffield Gaming Podcast. For more information on the Sheffield Games Collective, follow us over at Sheffield Gaming on Twitter, Sheffield Games on Instagram, and at our website, sheffield.games. Our incredible intro and outro were provided to us by Harley over at harleylikesmusic.com.